Voices of VR podcast. Hello, my name is Ken Pai, and welcome to the Voices of VR podcast. It's a podcast that looks at the structures and forms of immersive storytelling and the future of spatial computing. You can support the podcast at patreon.com/voicesofvr. So continuing my coverage from Venice Immersive 2025, today's episode is with a piece called The Sad Story of the Little Mouse Who Wanted to Become Somebody. And this is a part of the competition at Venice Immersive 2025. So this is a virtual reality animated cinematic VR piece. And so this story is about a mouse who is an artist and who is making these toys and then kind of stumbles upon someone who ends up being Santa Claus. And then Santa Claus actually puts a spell on the mouse so that the mouse is now invisible and can't be seen. And so the mouse is sort of forced to go and work for Santa Claus in this, what ends up being like a little bit more of a mechanical, industrialized, kind of automated type of workshop rather than kind of the bespoke workshop that the mouse is used to working on. It feels like a little bit of being like in a prison to have to like do the work in order to become free again. And so the story goes from the humble beginnings of the workshop at the mouse's home, and then it goes into like these different expressions of identity as they're communicating on social media, and also eventually becoming invisible, no longer being seen, and then transitioning into this kind of otherworldly Santa's workshop, going on this grand adventure, and then becomes a little bit more of a professional workplace and highly industrialized and automated, turning the creative work into a bit of a slog of manual tasks devoid of much creativity or autonomy, work that translates into a bit of a situation of slavery. So the center of gravity of the piece is very much a cinematic, emotional presence and a narrative-driven story. There's no agency, interactivity at all. You're just kind of watching the story as it unfolds, and it's very much a kind of immersive narrative where you're taking into these vast worlds and this very detailed, high resolution quality, great world building as you go into like these Santa's workshops and see all these different scenes of automation. And most of the dialogue is being communicated through the dialogue of these different characters without much narration. So the major themes are this kind of desire to become radical and free and create these bespoke, handcrafted creativity with this unbounded creative imagination, intention with this automated utility, and a bit of structured authoritarianism. So certainly a modern day fairy tale that speaks a lot about the dynamics of artificial intelligence and automation. What's it mean to be an artist within the context of all this automation? From the description, it says, quote, "The little mouse was about to discover that climbing the corporate ladder was not all that she had hoped it would be. How difficult it is for artists to find their place in the hyper-competitive automated world. On one side, there's a struggle to exist and to be seen when you're seen as small as the little mouse and still need to earn a living. On the other, there's the challenge of preserving craft and creativity in a world where machines increasingly threaten to replace creators altogether." So we're covering all that and more on today's episode of the Voices of VR podcast. So this interview with Nicholas happened on Tuesday, September 2nd, 2025 at Venice Immersive in Venice, Italy. So with that, let's go ahead and dive right in.
My name is Nicolas Bornickel. I'm the VR director of La Triste Histoire de la Petite Souris qui voulait devenir quelqu'un. In English, it's The Sad Story of the Little Mouse Who Wanted to Become Somebody. I'm a VR director. I've been doing commercial work for like 20 years in classical 2D screen. And then about 10 or 11 years ago, I think, I started to work with the guys from Atlas 5. They made Oculus Studio, and we started to make 360 video with a lot of lenses and trying to stitch everything into 360 video. And then we went to 3D and discovered all the beautiful tools that we have in virtual reality. Tools like Gravity Sketch, Quill, or even Blender, where it's really easy to plug your headset and be inside your 3D scene. And I fell in love with this because I had the feeling that for the first time in our life, we saw 3D into a volumetric screen. I did VFX for classical 2D screen, and you make models and then you flatten these models into like composition, blur and smoke and stuff like that, and suddenly 3D disappear. Now we have a volumetric screen that you can put on your head, and I found it like really amazing. And we started to work on this project wrote by Florian Cortes, the screenwriter. And it was like a few years ago working with Antoine from Atlas, and then with Aurélie Leduc, and then with Adrien Plug, that they brought me to Renard Film and the Pack in Germany and Belgium. And now the movie is over, and it's such an amazing opportunity to be able to show it in Venice and meeting all the people and all those different projects. So we are here.
Nice. And on the podcast, I always like to hear all the different design disciplines that people are bringing in. And so I'm wondering if you could expand a little bit more and give a bit more context as to your background and your journey into working with immersive.
Yeah. At the beginning, when I was really young, I started to draw and like copying comic books like Ninja Turtle and stuff like that. And then my father showed me his camera and I fell in love with it. I watched, when I was young, like 14 to 18, a lot of skate video. And I think I fell in love with moving picture when I saw like transfer video that used like mini DV and 16 millimeter camera. It was like, and still is really great movie. I fell in love with video. I started to edit, and then drawing came back and I started to do motion design for commercial. And then it led me to 3D. And then I've mixed a lot of these disciplines into my commercial work and personal work, and I was introduced to virtual reality, and I was like blown away by the discipline. So I don't know where to start. It's been a long journey. I'm 40 now, and I spend my life drawing and in front of a computer, so I don't know where to start.
Well, what were some of the first VR experiences that really opened up your mind that you wanted to shift from doing more film and the cinematic tradition and do more VR work? Were there any pieces or experiences that really showed you what was possible?
I think really using Quill for the first time was like really interesting, because when you do 3D work, you don't spend your time rotating your object. You are doing it on a 2D screen. Even though it's 3D, you see a 2D image. You can rotate, of course, scale, zoom. When you put the VR headset, since you are moving a little bit, you feel, your brain feel that this is a volumetric object. And really, at the beginning, discovering Quill was like amazing. And then Gravity Sketch was also something. It was the first time I really enjoy being inside a helmet, and those software are so good. I can spend hours and hours and hours in it. And of course, after that, I saw Gloomy Eyes, a production from Antoine at Atlas. And I always thought, maybe we can do narrative stuff with this volumetric screen, the helmet. But I realized, yeah, they did it. So I want to do my own now. It really, Gloomy Eyes took me like really far away, and it was so good to be inside those scenes. So I played a game, The Last Clockwinder, which is interactive, and what they achieve as gameplay, they found something I never found anywhere else. For the first time, I played with my own body, and this game, you are able to do like motion capture of yourself for a short amount of time, and you have, and it creates small robot. I don't know if you've seen it. You create small robot. For those who don't know, please stop the podcast, play the game, and start again the podcast after that, because it's like a masterpiece of interactive things. You create little robot that mimics your motion capture, and you are, it's a puzzle game. You have to mix them, create a lot of version of yourself to achieve each level. And it was like, damn, in terms of interactivity, this is the most beautiful and simple and beautiful things I've ever seen in my life. And I don't know, I've seen so much Quill work here, and here in Venice you have, I'm sorry, I think the name is less
than 5 grams of saffron.
Thank you. This project is so subtle. VR is getting sometimes too technical. You have to have a lot of computer, a lot of graphic cards, lots of wire and stuff like that. And here you see the movie. It's so simple, subtle. There's a gesture that is so pure and honest. It's immediately here, and the emotion is beautiful. So we've seen a lot of stuff even in Blender, you have this little plugin called Freebird XR where you can do stop motion with your own hand inside. And I have the feeling that this is a field that is endless. And I don't know if it will become something big. And personally, I don't want it to become something big. I remember when the internet arrived to us, it was like a strange place where you have to find yourself funny things, horror things and stuff like that. And it was such a strange and lovely place to discover. Today, I have the feeling that you go to a place and you have to buy something and it's like big corporations and stuff like that. And personally, I would like the VR to remain small because I know a lot of people that are making big, big budget production. And at the end, so often they told me, I wanted to do that, but I have to change it because of the market and I have to do that and I have to do that. And here, I have the feeling that Venice Immersive Festival is like indie type of festival. You have so much different things. It's really moving, I think. I get emotional seeing all those people that are doing stuff that are so different. It's art. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's a really great selection this year and all the other previous years at Venice. It's always an amazing opportunity to see like a variety of different artists and styles and ways that people are using the medium. And this piece is very cinematic in a way that almost could be translated into a 2D video or particularly a dome experience. I think this would work particularly well in a dome. I think it's a real spatial story, but you also get a lot more of being immersed into this world and seeing the differences in scale. And so I'm just curious, where did the sad story of a little mouse who wanted to be somebody, where did this whole project begin?
At the beginning, it was a short story for kids. Florian Cortez, the screenwriter, found archives of the project in like 2011. So it was really old. And
Just to clarify, archives meaning that it was already written previously, or what's that mean that he found it in archives?
Yeah, we found concept art that I did in like 2011. And it's funny because I found the exact poster that we have now, a little mouse on top of the building with the city on it, like the Batman type of iconic images. And it was funny. And while doing VR, we thought it would be so great to be mouse size and to be inside big environment and meeting like this old man, which happens to be Santa Claus. When he speaks to you, it's like a gigantic mass in front of you. So I think the things with VR and what they did at the pack is like amazing. They shrink the viewer, so you end up being inside human environment that are so big. And I mean, as I said, I think 6 degrees of freedom allows you to put everything around you. But my point is, it's not because you can do all around you that you have to do all around you. I think the feeling of just seeing a cube in front of you in VR makes you feel that this is volumetric. So I can tell a story with the viewer really inside this environment. And if you shrink the viewer, it's even more funny, I think.
Yeah, and so there's a number of co-producers on this project, including Atlas V, Raynard Films, and The Pack. And so maybe you could just describe a bit of what were each of these different co-producers trying to pay attention to as you were putting together this project?
Yeah, first of all, thanks to all of them, because I met people that really loves VR and were really careful with the project, achieving such amount of work. Thanks so much to them. Basically, it's a mixed match of everything, but Reinhardt Film in Germany, they made animation, 3D animation, 2D animation, quill animation, and stuff like that. And The Pack in Belgium, they made the environment and the editing of the movie. So it was like animation on one side and art direction of the environment on the other side.
Yeah. Was Atlas V looking at anything in particular?
They made with their own studio Albion also 3D work like modeling and stuff like that. Yeah.
Okay. And so it sounds like you had a script and it's very cinematic. So I'm imagining that was the backbone of this piece, was going from the story. But as you were putting it together, I'm wondering how much the world building and the building out of the scenes, was there any like feedback into like changing the script in order to either change aspects of the story, or if the story and script was pretty well set and then it was just a matter of building it out more like a traditional film production pipeline?
I think once we had the script, it was pretty much straightforward, and just making decision in terms of where we place the camera and what happened in every scene. We gather a budget and we end up saying like you have 25 to 28 minutes, and inside that we have to make the film. So it was really, we write the script and then we go into production. There were no going forward, going backward. It was like, we have the script and now we can make the movie.
And in terms of just your process of directing this, did you have storyboards or did you have animatics? I'm just trying to get a sense of like how you were working with the script, but then the pre-visualization stage, just, you know, what that process was like and what kind of techniques you were using.
Yeah, in fact, once we have the script, I started with the blocking, because I work with Florian Cortes, and what we've did, we record all the dialogue in French. So it first allows you to test. Sometimes you have beautiful line on paper and it doesn't work while you're playing it. So we record the voice, and then it was really cool because it was, I don't know how to say, we were very enthusiastic to do it. It was fun to play the stuff, and we saw that this is too long, we have to cut it, and this is a bad word, we cannot say that, so we have to re-record the sound. And then when I had that, I made a blocking in Blender to see how, for example, one room will look like. Is it like 8 meters long and 4 meters wide? And then I go into VR to make a posing of the little mouse, and then maybe retake for the sound, adjusting it. And I made like the animatic like in grayscale with stupid pose of a simple character of the little mouse. And then once we were happy with that, we send it to the pack in Belgium so they can start to work with the correct scale and the position of the little mouse and the correct timing, and then they can make a beautiful version and not a cheap gray version of what I did. But it was really cool to do it because it's like small theater. You do rehearsal, you play, and you feel, this is good, or we have to change that, and you can feel the rhythm of what you are doing, because storyboard can be cool just to find idea of stuff, but you have to be in the room, in the situation. You have to set a correct distance. In virtual reality, it's really important, the position of the camera with the main character. So we can test it like really early. And then once we were happy with that, let's go back into the production and give it to the artist that will make like cool lighting and nice texture and cool animation.
And so when you were going into Blender and doing the gray box, setting up the scene and creating an animatic, were you also in VR to get the sense of scale as well?
Yeah. The idea is that every object or asset were like the final size, even though it's blocking and simple, like a workbench. Like I did like really simple stuff, but it was important to me. If I do it in 2D, maybe someone sent me something and I said, no, it's like a little bit on the right, a little bit on the left, and it's getting complicated. You have to see what are the correct position and the correct orientation of the camera, for example. You have to check the timing of every pose. It's really, it's not so hard to do. It's not so technical to do. So if I can do it, let's do it. And it's funny to, you can imagine scene in your head, but once you get into 3D and virtual reality, it's totally different. So you have to be inside the helmet. I tried many software to try to do a blocking, and at the end it was simpler in Blender. I can work with the mask or without the mask. I have my shortcut. I'm really used to that software, and VR works really well inside it. So if they can implement the fact that you can do APK in Blender, I'll be like really happy. If someone hears me in this space, it's like a bottle in the ocean. I don't know if it's possible. I don't think it's possible, but that would be like really handy.
So then how do you pass over the animatic? Is it a 2D film, or do you actually just export the file from Blender and have the audio in there, or GLTF? Like, how do you actually deliver the animatic and what format?
Yeah, what is cool is that in Unity, you drag and drop a Blender file, and then it works. You have the posing, and you have the timing, and it works on second, not on frame. So we just set up that it was 60 frames per second, but you drag and drop the file, and you only have to make sure that all the objects that you hide are not there, because everything will open, so you have to be a little bit careful. Watch out for your scale and rotation, because sometimes you can have problem, but it's like really easy to use. Like, Unity opens Blender like right away, and then it's a quick way to exchange. And during the pipeline, Julio at Reinhardt, he create a little robot that work with us. Like, it's a script that makes Unity version at the end of each day. So we can implement, and the robot creates a new version. I think I saw like 400 versions of the little mouse from gray to finish. So it's like really easy to implement, and we send something. Of course, sometimes you realize that some decisions weren't so interesting, because we really have to work quickly, and you're okay with an idea, and maybe 2 weeks after that, you realize like, I'm not sure I like this idea. So it takes a long time, but for virtual reality, I have the feeling that tools are getting like really cool to use. When I started, I remember spending so much time rendering, stitching frame, and going to post-production to get rid of something that no one will ever see. Now it's getting like quite fun, and it's a great time to do VR. I remember, like, 10 years ago, it was a bit of a nightmare. Now it's getting really cool. I saw The Great Escape in Venice. It's quite cool, and it's like a bit of a punk style in terms of graphic, and I saw that, and I wanted to do my own kind of stuff, because, like you said, it's cool, let's do it. So it's a good time to do VR.
Yeah, it was a very fun and funny experience as well. In your artist statement video for the Sad Story of a Little Mouse Who Wanted to Be Somebody, there was talk of how there were some additional pipelines for character animation, where you could wire up directly from Maya to do the character animations and then feed it directly into Unity. And so, yeah, it sounds like that there was also a lot of emphasis of hand keyframed animation to really bring out the emotionality. So as a director, I'm just curious to hear a little bit more around the direction of trying to get as vivid of emotion and expression as you could, and just some of the pipeline that you had to kind of automate that process as well.
Yeah, in fact, virtual reality allows you to show a lot of frame inside the helmet, and sometimes it's like too framey, and I wanted to get rid of certain frames, so we choose to do on twos mostly, and on threes in terms of animation, because it looks cooler and you feel that someone is behind that. Otherwise, you feel like it's computer generated, and I don't find it like really enjoyable to watch. So we stick to like frame by frame animation, and the team at Reinhardt made a wonderful job for that. But if there's too much frame, I don't like that.
So it's 60 frames per second. So you're saying you would like hold a position for 2 or 3 or 4 frames just to get a little bit of a stutter effect that give you a sense of what we are used to seeing in other like stop motion animation or other animation.
Yeah, and if you don't force the animation to be on twos, sometimes the computer can propose you pose that you don't really want. So let's stick to each pose is a decision. It's really important for me. And the movie is about making things. I want it to be like handmade animation. So this is why we went to that kind of way.
Awesome. Well, we've covered some of the technical sides of getting it up to the point, and love to hear a little bit more around the story in terms of this little mouse who is a bit arrogant and, you know, wants to find her own way. And there's a bit of like social media. She's a bit of a lone wolf where she's posting these and trying to sell her works. And yeah, she kind of like enters a portal into another realm and takes a career pivot. So yeah, maybe just kind of set the scene for the trajectory of the sad little mouse.
Yeah, in fact, I wanted to speak about the creative field because we are stuck between we want to do art and good art. And we are all here because maybe when we were younger, we saw something that was like amazing and I don't know how to say siège éjectable, but it was really moving. And then we wanted to go into the art field. But you also have to make a living and you also have to rely on client. And there's also a lot of concurrence. So this situation that we can call capitalism, sometimes it can hurt you and you can become mean. And we have the champion of meanness with the little mouse, and she wants to have her name written big on the screen and she wants her to be recognized because she's a great artist. I mean, we know a lot of great artists that are also like idiots or pain in the ass, but they are really good. And I love the fact that I don't know how I feel about this little mouse, because it's true that sometimes in big shop they sell crap and they make a lot of toys to make a lot of money, and she's really good. She's like a really good woodworker. So she become mean. I can understand her, but sometimes you also want to say to her like, chill out. It's okay, it's art, but please chill out. So I love the fact that even she met Santa Claus and he said a lot of compliments to her. He recognized her heart, but he's also the same idiot as her. So I love when you don't really know what you think about those people. I mean, I started to gather a collection of movies that I really love, and I think those movies are speaking about someone who's trying to make the best art he can. If you saw Inside Llewyn Davies, it's the story of a guitar player that want to become the best folk artist. I also love Tar from Todd Field with Kate Blanchett, where she's a chief in Berlin. And this is when the little mouse becomes Santa Claus because she has all the power and she's getting really mad and awful to people around her. I love so much of those movies that are speaking about creation and how it affects you that I wanted to have my own. And we started from a tale for kids, but as Alberto Barbera, the art director of Venice, said, we have to make stories that are into the world and not creating stories that are in space in 300 years or... We have to rely on what we live, and this is what we try to achieve. This film is about ambition, art, and ego. And this is like a triangle of madness, as the famous film was called. And I don't know, I can talk about Tar, I can talk about Inside Llewyn Davies, and I love movies from artists. And when you really talk about creation, it's not like... You talk about creation and how it affects you. And the little mouse is so little. She doesn't have a lot of strength. She doesn't have a lot of money to have like big machine and big workshop. So she tried to do her best. And sometimes having client that says, oh no, that's not the right color. Or I want another shape. She's getting mad. And one day she speak badly to this old man. And he said, you should be very careful how you talk to people. And then she said, yeah, if you want to. And then she come back to post something on Instagram. And when she opens her phone, she realized that she become invisible because she can see her own image in the iPhone, only her toys. And then she starts to freak out. She have a panic attack and she goes outside on the street. And no one see everyone disappear except that man that is right at the corner of the street. And then she started to chase him. She's entering a building and You have a scene inside a building where suddenly it's a grotto with stair that goes in the dark, in the shadow, and you only have one glowing door. So it's like, what is going on? We are in the real world, and suddenly it's a place strange. And then when she goes inside the door, it's like a startup office, and this old man is in fact Santa Claus, and he's yelling at people. He's in a Zoom meeting, and he's like horrible to his employees. So we wanted to make like a twisted comedy, a twisted fairy tale about the creative fields, and also about work office and how it's so boring to work in a company sometimes because everything becomes automated, and we also have AI that is coming, and it's a problem for artists. Sometimes AI can be like so funky. I have a website where I can plug all my favorite music, and AI is separate the file, and I can play bass, and I'm so happy that it exists. But you also have client that says, we did concept art, can you redraw it or make a paint over? And it's like, come on, it's my job. And it's AI is like the little mouse. We still don't know what to think about. Some things are crazy. Some things are amazing. But when you see that kids can make a trailer that will cost like $100 million, and it's really complicated to artists that work on the creative field. On the other hand, you have amazing stuff that are coming with AI. So it was time to make the little mouse, because this is what happened in the creative field. At least for me.
Yeah, I really appreciated all of the allusions to artificial intelligence and automation and all the structures of capitalism that are the pressures of efficiency and kind of squashing down the bespoke, handcrafted nature of production and a lot of rules, but also the explicit character that is like an AI robot, but also, you know, these larger issues around AI. As you're producing this, were there any way that you were using AI at all? Or was it more of like trying to actually avoid all of those downfalls that you're also critiquing within the narrative?
Yeah, no, everything was handmade, and we wanted to really work with people. Computer work could be like really lonely sometimes, and all the teams were so kind and nice and fun, and it was like, no AI for this project, but I'm not against it. It's more that for now I don't have an opinion, but since we have great team, let's do great work together. But maybe sometimes for now it's like, no, unauthorized on the little mouse, not with that story.
Yeah, so I know that this is a piece that's very cinematic and it feels very immersive. And I think a question that often comes up is, why VR? Why does this piece need to be in VR? Love to hear your response to that, because I know it's a question that comes up a lot.
Yeah. Firstly, VR, because it's like really fun and because we can play with the scale of the environment. And to me, I'm a simple guy. If I can feel small inside a big environment, a big human environment, then let's do it. I've been into university and I can write thesis of like 200 or 2000 pages or why I did that. I'm a simple guy, and like just feeling small inside the big human world is like, it's enough for me. I want to see it in VR.
And I'm curious because there have been more and more of translations of 2D films into a dome context. So the Cosm has The Matrix, and then The Sphere is going to be showing The Wizard of Oz, where The Matrix was a little bit more of showing the 16:9 frame that doesn't actually change anything about the film. And then everything that's in the dome is just giving the fuller context of the environments and the contexts. And then you also have The Sphere, which is taking a very liberal approach of kind of blowing out the frame and just trying to translate The Wizard of Oz into a full dome experience. And so as I see this as a trend, when I saw the sad little story of a little mouse who wanted to be somebody, I thought, oh, this could actually potentially be translated into a dome type of experience, because you do get a sense of the spatialization. You lose some of the depth, obviously, and it might have to be tuned, but just curious if that's something that you've looked at, because it feels like this is a type of story that could potentially work well within a dome context.
Yeah, in fact, I would love to see those kind of dumb experiments with the little mouse, because I really want people to see it in the helmet with the cool sound and the volumetric screen. But 2 months ago, Renard told me that they had an opportunity to project into a big room the little mouse, like 3 faces. The main action is on the front wall, and you also have projection on the wall on the left and on the right. And I said to myself, that will never work. But since the room looks like our environment, the result is so lovely. I was blown away because it really works. So if you know somebody that has DOM or can try to put the little mouse inside, maybe that will work. I have to see it to feel it. But the main experience is VR to me.
Yeah, I know COSM has like an RD lab in Salt Lake City in Utah in the United States that doing these translations for what works or what doesn't work. I think you sometimes just have to take a look and see, and sometimes things have to be adapted. But yeah, I think it's thinking around like there's limited distribution availability with so many headsets, and then these dome experiences seem to be like other venues and other pathways for people to see. Obviously, you lose a lot of the depth when that kind of gets projected onto the skybox, and so it may or may not work, especially because, you know, in a front-facing dome, you have different seats, and when you're looking at this VR experience, you are in the sweet spot of seeing the story from that singular point of view, and then you end up having multiple perspectives of the project that then also could potentially change it as well. So yeah, I'd have to see it to know, but when I was watching the experience, I was like, oh, I wonder if this would work in a dome. That's probably because I just got back from some dome experiences of seeing like some pieces at COSM and just thinking around the broader ecosystem. So anyway, it's something that you could probably, you know, explore a little bit more. So yeah, I guess what's next for the sad little story of a little mouse who wanted to be somebody?
We have other festival that we will go, and I think the movie will be released by the end of the year on the streaming platforms. And I don't know, I have other stories of little mouse to tell, and for now I just want to go back to the garden and to my home and to take a little bit of time away from the computer, because we have like 2 screens, we have a Wacom tablet graphic, and now we are inside the helmet. It's like a lot of screen, so I have to take a little bit of time away to take a bit of rest, and then we'll see for the future.
Is there anything that you want to experience within VR?
I have in mind a garden game where like you can spend time learning how plants grow together and how they interact. It's like a tutorial to see how garden works. But when I speak to my friends that are developers, they say it's not possible at all. It's really too complicated what I have in mind. So garden game, I tried few garden game, but I really want to make something specific and realistic. But I don't know, maybe I want to stick to narrative piece. This is true, but interactivity is like something that I do all the time, all day long with gravity sketch and stuff like that. So I don't know what's going to happen next.
So when you say that you've been spending a lot of time in the garden, you've been literally gardening a lot?
Yay. Yeah, yeah. I have been living in Paris for 15 years, and after COVID, we went to the countryside, like 1 hour from Paris, and there's forest, pound, and cows, and birds, and we have space to gardening, so it's so relaxing and so cool to do it, spending time outside. It's a really a great balance, because we are connected, we have a lot of tech, and we've made complex things with the computer. Sometimes it's also cool to just watch birds.
Great. And finally, what do you think the ultimate potential of virtual reality and immersive storytelling might be, and what it might be able to enable?
For me, I already reached a peak in terms of masterpiece with like the Quest 2. I'm a simple guy, and this little piece works every time, all the time. It is so funny to draw and make 3D volume inside that. Gravity Sketch Quill, it's like, I don't know why no one talks about it all the time because for me, it's like masterpiece and it's so funny. You can do 3D without having to learn the complexity of a software because 3D sometimes it's like, it's really scary. You see the interface of a software, it's like, I don't want to learn that. But in virtual reality, it's so simple. Like in 5 minutes, if someone have never made 3D, in 5 minutes in Gravity Sketch, they can start to make character and sculpting. And Adobe Medium is also really cool for sculpture. And to me, those tools are so powerful. We have the tool to make great story. Once again, less than 5 grams of saffron was made in Quill. And the pipeline is like, I won't say it's simple, but compared to other things that we saw that are really technical, the tools are already here. We just have to find our emotion and to find what we want to tell, and the tools are here to me. But I'm a simple guy. I know that a lot of my friends, which are VR directors, say, no, we have to go to move forward. We have to make bigger. No, the tools are here. Let's use it. These are beautiful tools. You have to see what Venice show. You have like simple and beautiful experience. When you get too technical, if art is a bird, it's fly in the room and you plug wires and computers and watch out because the bird will fly through the window. It's getting too technical. We have simple and beautiful tools. We just have to know what we want to tell and what kind of story we want to make. So I'm a simple guy. I'm not against tech, of course. I use computer all day, but we already have beautiful tools. Let's make great stories.
Great. Is there anything else that's left unsaid? Any final thoughts that you have for the broader immersive community?
Well, first, thank you, Ken, for the interview. And we have the tools. We don't need to get more tech, more complicated, more stuff. Let's try to find what's really important to us and let's use everything that already exists to make great stories.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me today to help break down a bit about the process and journey of creating the sad story of a little mouse who wanted to be somebody. You know, for me, I take home like this beautiful kind of cinematic story that really does feel like you're immersed into the world. And so I think that, you know, there's a value add of actually seeing it in virtual reality because you're really transported into these different places. And I feel like it's just great characters, great story, and yeah, kind of a twist on a myth that I wasn't familiar with because there's various variations of these myths that you're really exploring. And so it's like a fun way of discovering new ways of thinking about the Tooth Fairy and Santa Claus. So yeah, very much appreciated you sharing a little bit more about your journey and story of creating this project. And best of luck as you move forward in the future. So thanks again for joining me here on the podcast.
Thank you, Kent. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for tuning into this Venice Immersive 2025 coverage, and hopefully you found some use in some of this documentation of these experiences that are very ephemeral. And some of these show at these festivals, and they don't really go out widely beyond this a lot of times. I mean, maybe they are, but you may not be in a place that it's easy for you to see them. And so it's a real privilege to be able to see all these experiences, but also to be able to sit down with these creators and have a really deep, in-depth conversation in a way that there are not a lot of other opportunities to really dig into at this level. And so really appreciate all the time from all the creators to be able to have these conversations, but also for you to take the time to listen to them. And also it's been a challenge of trying to find a way of speaking about these experiences in an abstract, theoretical way, or at least in a way that I can ground it and allow you to put yourself into the experiences to kind of imagine some of these different things that they're doing, how I'm experiencing it, but also the different types of design decisions that the creator is making. So if you find this useful and want to support this type of effort of both documenting the history of immersive storytelling, but also to support this kind of wildly ambitious independent journalism project that is very much driven by support by listeners like yourself. So please do consider becoming a member of the Patreon at patreon.com/voicesofvr. Thanks for listening. Thank you.